Welcome to the Doctor's Life podcast with Diane Ansari Wynn, MD. Dr. Diane is a stress and burnout coach for doctors. With her 15 years of experience as an anesthesiologist and certification as a physician development coach, Dr. Diane coaches doctors on how to live a rich life of purpose, fulfillment, freedom, and happiness both at work and at home. In this podcast, Dr. Diane brings together doctors and researchers that are experts in health, wellness, stress, and burnout, as well as doctors that have been successful in clinical practice, academics, non-clinical careers, and business to share their expertise and life experience so that you can live your own life purpose, fulfillment, freedom, and happiness. To get free access to a PDF and video of easy and proven strategies that melt stress away and keep it away, simply register at www.dianeansari-win.com. That's www.dianeansari-win.com. Now here is your host, Dr. Diane Ansari Wynn.
Hi, it's Dr. Diane here, and I have a quick request before we jump into the show. If you like this podcast, it would mean so much if you took just a moment to hop over to iTunes, write a review, and rate the show. That is how other people will find the show and get the same great value from it that I hope that you're getting. It just takes a few moments to click a star rating and write a quick note. Now, on to the show. Well, hey, everybody. Welcome to the Doctor's Life podcast with Dr. Diane Ansari Wynn. Today, we are speaking with Dr. Maura Daugherty, MD, and we're going to be talking about self-care, and I'm really looking forward to this topic. Such a juicy topic and so needed in our physician community today. Dr. Daugherty, she grew up in San Francisco and she went to Berkeley and she trained at Albany Medical College and then at Virginia Mason in Seattle in anesthesia. She worked as an anesthesiologist in the Bay Area. And then she moved to Colorado, and we were actually in practice together while I was in anesthesiology practice. So very, very happy to have known Dr. Daugherty. And I know that she's very passionate about physician wellness and caring for physicians. And we're going to talk a little bit about some of the work that Dr. Daugherty is actually going to pursue a career in helping physicians more as she goes along. So, Dr. Daugherty, we're so happy to have you on the Doctor's Life podcast today. Welcome, welcome.
Oh, thank you, Diane. It's really a pleasure to be here.
As you probably know, all of you that have been listening to the podcast too, I like to talk with all of our guests about how they got into medicine, or if they're researchers, how they got into research. So, Dr. Daugherty, how did you end up getting into medicine?
I didn't actually originally intend to go into medicine. I was predominantly interested in literature and potentially in psychology when I was a young adult in college. And I remember sitting in the car with my father one afternoon, and he'd driven me home from something, and he just made this very quick, quiet comment, which was, you know, if you ever wanted to consider a career in medicine, you really have the personality for it. And that was a real turning point for me. You know, at that point, I had pretty much finished my degree in literature, and I went back and did pre-meds and decided to apply to medical school with the idea of pursuing a career in psychiatry.
Wow. So was your father a physician?
He was. He was a cardiac anesthesiologist. He actually started out in internal medicine with fellowship training in nephrology, and realized one day that the sort of sense of the work never being off of his desk was really uncomfortable, and thinking back recognized that he really loved his rotation in anesthesia, so ultimately went back to do a second residency in anesthesiology. And I actually had the pleasure of practicing with him for a handful of years before he retired, which was really fun because we sort of traded areas of interest in anesthesia. He was a cardiac anesthesiologist and I had trained particularly in regional anesthesia as well as cardiac anesthesia. So we got to trade tips, give each other breaks in the OR. It was really fun.
Oh, my goodness. That would be so fun.
Yeah, it was. It was a really, it was an amazing experience. It was a time where I really had an opportunity to really get to know my father.
Oh, man, that's fantastic. Well, today's chat is around self-care. And what, in your, from your view, is self-care? And why is it important?
I view self-care as two things. One is an attitude that I and my time and my health and my well-being really matter, which my experience is we don't really take that very seriously as physicians for ourselves, although we do very much for our patients. So it's an attitude, and then it's behaving in a way that honors our own self-worth. So taking the time to eat well, taking the time to sleep enough, taking the time to really still your mind, which I think is really important. I didn't really understand the implications of that until fairly recently when I started a master's program in clinical mental health counseling, which really emphasizes self-care. And the contrast to me was just very eye-opening. So whereas in medicine we are considered, you know, if we want time off or we need a break or, you know, God, I really have to go get something to eat or I have to pee, it's really regarded as a weakness. I just remember in training, you know, working hours and hours and having one day off a month, and if we ever expressed the idea that we were really tired, you know, that was frowned upon, as compared to in counseling where the idea of practitioner burnout is something that is on the forefront of people's thoughts. And so how do you avoid burnout? I think we have the same issues with burnout in medicine, but we don't really address it very well, whereas in the counseling world, it's something that has been talked about for longer and addressed more specifically. So really honoring the idea that taking care of yourself is important, caring about your own self-worth is really important. So I guess that's how I would begin to think about it. Also the idea of laying down boundaries, where specifically I mean being able to say no. In medicine in particular, as much as you have to give will be taken. In other words, there's always work to be done. There are always people that need to be taken care of. And as long as you are available, your time will be taken. It is really beholden on you to say, no, I need family time, and no, I need time for my own personal creativity, and, you know, no, I need time to sleep so that I can continue doing this effectively for the long term.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And as you said, there's the things that we should be doing to care for ourselves, and then sometimes that seems like it's in direct conflict with our careers. Maybe we can take an example from the counselors that you're working with. How do they negotiate that boundary? Because that's a huge cultural shift. I remember,
right.
You know, we were in the same practice, so
right.
I think we trained probably around the same era, and you know, it's only been, gosh, probably in the past few years where you're hearing or seeing more in the, I would call like the doctor's popular literatures, like Medscape and stuff like that, and in the journals, more discussion about physician burnout. And the research doesn't even go back that far. It looks most of the original research in burnout was started around 20 years ago or so. So it hasn't really been looked into for that long in our community. But still, it seems as though it's more like on the individual to kind of try to rise against the tide, so to speak. And
yes.
How do you suggest that gets negotiated?
Well, I think it's tricky in medicine, you know, because we're in a culture where self-care is not really overtly valued among ourselves and our colleagues, but also in our work schedule. Our work schedule is inherently sort of go, go, go. Whereas I believe in counseling, you have a little more leeway in terms of, and I could be wrong about this, but I think you have a little more leeway in terms of setting up your schedule, at least if you're a private practitioner. I think in medicine, it's partly, so for example, in the practice that I work in now, I don't have as much flexibility in terms of my day-to-day schedule at work, where my flexibility lies is in how much time I take off, and then how I use the time that I have when I'm off. I think there is a need for a slow cultural change among practitioners who work together so that, you know, as we progress together in our practices, recognize each other's needs to be taken care of or have time off. You know, being able to admit that, I guess, is where I would say is a good place to start. In the counseling world, being able to admit that is a non-issue because it's discussed right from the get-go. I mean, from the beginning of your training program, it is something that is addressed, discussed. What does it really mean? What does it really entail? And one of the things that I learned in my counseling practice that I think is so important that we could bring over to a practice in different types of medicine is never work alone. So in other words, in counseling, you may be, particularly in private practice, working individually with clients or patients, depending on your perspective, but you're working with other clinicians, and you look out for each other. So, you know, if I'm working with a colleague and my colleague tells me, you know, you're looking a little tired, you're looking like you're cresting into burnout, you really need to consider doing something about that. I think that's really important, and we definitely don't have that particular approach or attitude in medicine. I mean, I can't imagine anyone going up to any of my colleagues and saying, hey, you look like you're approaching burnout. It's just not done. So the idea of looking out for each other, the idea of allowing each other to take some time or space when we need it, and just having that in the forefront of our minds. It's really, I think it really, the first thing that needs to happen is a mindset change.
So there's a change in the mindset, and there's a support that you're speaking of that I think is so important. Let's circle back around to why self-care is important. So why is self-care for physicians so important?
Well, I think it's important for two reasons. One, for your own individual self. You know, I realized at one point in a very concrete way that we only go through this life once, and I do not want to be sitting on my rocking chair at the age of 80 thinking, wow, all I did was work. I took great care of an enormous number of people, so many I can't even remember, and I hardly remember spending time with my children or really connecting with my husband in a meaningful fashion over the long course of my life. So for self, but equally important is your ability to retain your core sense of empathy towards the people that you're taking care of, your ability to continue to connect to the people that you're taking care of, and your ability just to continue to do a very good job taking care of those people. I think that you do a much better job if you come from a grounded, rested position where, you know, there are multiple aspects of your personality that are being expressed rather than just show up to work, grind it out, go home, sleep for a few hours, show up to work, grind it out, go home, sleep for a few hours. I don't think anybody can retain their best practice under those circumstances. And after time, you know, you become very automatic. You don't connect with people anymore. You know, you lose the pleasure of what you do, and you just simply don't do as good a job. You can still be competent, but you lose that special touch that you have with people, the fact that you care, that you have the energy to care, and the ability to connect with them. You know, you're bringing people into the, at least in my profession, bringing people into the operating room at a very vulnerable period in their lives, and I think it's really important to make them feel comfortable, cared for, relaxed to the ability that we can do that before taking them into the operating room. And I just think, you know, if you come from a position of caring for yourself, you do a better job of caring for all of the other people that you spend a lifetime caring for.
Yeah, I completely agree, and that's been shown to be the case time and time in the literature too. So
yeah,
it makes a strong case for some of the, when we were talking about the individual versus the culture of medicine. And I think that for the longest time there's been the assumption that, like you said, as long as you're able to come into work and you do your work, there hasn't been as strong an association as who you are in your work.
Right.
In terms of your outcomes. I mean, there's been some parallels drawn. There's been some correlations. But now the literature clearly shows that physicians that are not suffering from stress and burnout do better. They're better clinicians.
Yeah.
And
makes intuitive sense.
Yeah. And, that's for someone who thinks like, oh, self-care is woo-woo and it's for wimps,
right,
and it's not, it's a question can always come back to, do you want to be the best clinician that you can possibly be for your patients?
Yeah.
And no clinician can deny. I mean, that's what we all want when we're caring for patients. Some other things that that I see are that physician suicide rates are very high in our profession.
I meant to bring that up as well.
Yeah, please
so the
do.
Other side of the picture is the suicide rate among physicians is among the highest in professions. And within the profession of medicine, anesthesiologists suffer probably one of the highest suicide rates. I think partly because of the responsibility that we take on and the fact that we don't do a good job of taking care of ourselves. And of course we have access to lethal drugs all the time. So our ability to succeed in a suicide is probably much greater than a lot of other people. But so suicide, also depression and anxiety are higher among trainees in medicine than among practitioners. And those things take a long-term health toll on us, on our families, and on our ability to take care of patients effectively. So I think those are really important things to address, and self-care is one way to approach that.
You were discussing self-care on as being kind of a holistic approach to self-care. Is eating well and sleeping enough and stilling our minds, creative endeavors, and being with the people that we love, trying to create work-life balance.
Work-life balance, yes.
There's, say that somebody is, they're listening to the podcast, they're agreeing with us that, self-care is important. Maybe they want to incorporate some self-care, more self-care into their lives. Where would you recommend that someone start?
I'm trying to think of some of the papers that we've read in my counseling program. They really have predominantly focused on eating well, sleeping enough, mindfulness practices. I mean, there's certainly a lot of data to support mindfulness practices. If I were talking to somebody one-on-one, and in particular I'm thinking about, the notion of self-care being, woo-woo, like you were talking about earlier. And I used to be one of those people, right? We think, oh, self-care, that's for people who don't know how to work hard, right?
For people who aren't tough enough. They don't have any work ethic.
Exactly. It's tough because in our work world, we can't just say, I'm gonna quit work at 3 o'clock this afternoon because I'm gonna go home and do some self-care, right? It doesn't work that way. So, you're responsible for the work that you're responsible for regardless of whether you want to do self-care or not. So realistically speaking, the first thing you have to do is work within your contemporary schedule, the way things are set up as is. And I would say the first thing is, what are you eating? I mean, I look at the I look at the food that is available to physicians, and a lot of it is, and not necessarily where I work, because they do a really good job of providing lunch for us where I work. But in a lot of places, when you are in a cafeteria and you're eating food out of a box and, you know, it's loaded with salt, sugar, and fat, right off the bat, there's something you can do eating well as eating fresh whole vegetables, fresh whole fruit, and whatever particular diet is appropriate for your genetic heritage. And, boy, there's a lot to talk about there. But right off the bat, there's something simple you can do is really kind of pay attention to what you're eating. And as you're changing your eating habits, how you feel. You know, people who go from eating prefab processed foods, who change over to a healthy diet often recognize that they feel a lot better. The other thing that people can do is exercise. And I mean, boy, we say that in primary care offices all the time, and talking about exercise versus really taking it on is a difficult transition to make. But again, once you start doing that on a regular basis, you recognize that you feel so much better. And then getting enough sleep, you know, being disciplined about turning your devices off or not answering the phone or, you know, unless you're on call, of course, really being disciplined enough to get regular sleep. And I would say that slipping in some regularly scheduled time for meditation, particularly either early in the morning or late in the evening as you're getting ready for bed, learning how to still your mind on a regular basis just is, I mean, it took me such a long time to get to the point of recognizing how helpful that really is. And it really allows you to begin to reevaluate the things in your life that are important. And, you know, should I be running like this all the time? Maybe I ought to consider, you know, doing things in my practice a little bit differently. In other words, it gives you the time and the space to think about those things that you can do to change your lifestyle so that it's more comfortable and productive for you. So all of those very simple things, simple to think about, simple things to do, but not necessarily so easy to make those things happen in your life. But with great rewards if you can engage in those activities.
Yeah,
and that's what I would say.
I like what you've suggested, because those are things that we can definitely do, even if nothing else changed. You know, say that you can't change your schedule, or you know, you can eat healthier. You know, you can you can turn off that TV and get a little bit more sleep. You can try and get some more exercise in. And it doesn't have to be, an all or nothing thing. It's not like a New Year's resolution where, you know, these are things that you can start to bring into daily life. And
don't set yourself up for defeat by saying, okay, I'm going to win a marathon right now. You know, little steps, little things.
So interestingly enough, what you're describing, as you said, is what we would tell any patient of ours.
Are you seeing the irony?
Yes, it's very sick.
We're never going to do it, right? Yeah, no, we should be practicing what we preach. There actually is an amazing amount of you know, validity to what we preach.
Right,
it ourselves.
I love what you're saying. Yeah. It's not because it's, as you said, it's not just because it's physician wellness doesn't really make it any different than, you know, human wellness.
Right. Well, and I mean, we're so much more authentic and, you know, we carry so much more weight behind our words. If, you know, I mean, it's one thing for me to say, you know, rush in, okay, I have 10 minutes to talk to you. I think you should exercise. I think you should eat well. And, yeah, by the way, get some meditation in there. Okay, next. You know, as compared to saying, you know, let me tell you how this is going to – you might really feel the way you feel might change. You know, and I can talk about that based on my own experience. You know, when I changed my eating habits, when I changed my workout habits, when I changed my sleeping habits, these are the things that I felt as a real concrete benefit. You know, you have much more credibility when you talk to people, and you know what you're talking about because you've done those things too. And you're also communicating to people that those things are important by the fact that you do them. So in a sense, you're modeling those behaviors for people in addition to advising them, which I think is a very powerful tool.
Yes, absolutely. Any last points that you wanted to share or things that you wanted to share with the audience? This has been a really rich discussion, and really glad to have had this interview with you today.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. You know, yes and no. I mean, I could talk about this topic forever. I would just say that I was a person who really sort of took on the idea of self-care as being ridiculous for, I would say, the first 15 years of my practice. And, you know, something happens in everybody's life that sort of changes your perspective. And I had a perspective-changing event in my life. And, you know, it sort of made me sit back and think, you know, what really is important here? What am I going to look back on and say, you know, I was really proud that I did this. I'm so glad that I did that. I think, you know, gosh, if I could do anything differently, I would love to have had that change of heart happen 15 years earlier or 20 years earlier rather than when it did. I mean, you know, it's never too late to change, but the sooner you change, the better your life is, right? And the other thing I would say is it's not as difficult as it sounds, and it's very rewarding. And I guess I would just finish up with that.
Dr. Maura Doherty, thank you so much for being on the Doctor's Life podcast today. Really enjoyed this discussion on self-care, and I'm sure the audience picked up a lot from it. Basically, that we're all in this together. We have to take care of ourselves and each other, and we can do it. We can do it. So
yeah, we can, thanks. Absolutely.
Yeah, so thank you again. And until next time, everybody, I hope you all stay happy and healthy, and we'll look forward to seeing you guys the next time on the Doctor's Life podcast. You guys take care.
You've been listening to the Doctor's Life podcast with Diane Ansari Wynn, MD. Go to www.dianeansari-wynn.com to read show notes, listen to past episodes, share your comments and show ideas, and pick up your free PDF and video of easy and proven strategies that will melt your daily stress away. That's www.dianeansari-wynn.com.